You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, good evening, my partner in life.
Good evening. This is a very happy day for me.
Why is it happy for you?
Well, because it's the starting day of our vacation, and we will be getting some time off, which is just, it's unheard of.
That never happens.
Yeah, it's just so unbelievable. And I know that we won't get the whole time that we think off, or at least I sure know that I won't. But the first 4 days, for sure, we are going to have completely nobody, no clients, no
right. No kids, no nothing.
So I'm really, really looking forward to, good friends, good food, and my soulmate in life.
Well, I'll tell you what, I went through 3 tough months of trial schedules. And just a whole bunch of reports, and I spent the last, besides going and testifying, I spent the last 2 weeks doing nothing but writing forensic reports, and I cleared my desk, and I'm so excited to leave.
Yeah, me too. I worked on payrolls and commissions and made sure everything, I had everything in. Actually, I just reminded myself I need to do one more thing, but it'll get done. So, I would like to talk about marijuana.
You're going to start with marijuana tonight in our conversation.
Talk about marijuana.
All right.
And just,
thinking about, smoking
and driving,
or what?
Yeah. I have known for my whole life, at least since I was in my late teens, that marijuana was not a good thing. And sometimes I have these arguments with people about it, not arguments, discussions, conversations about it, and there's certainly a huge percentage of the population that does not think that there's any ill effects of marijuana. And I have known and believed my whole life that there is. And what is really interesting, it has been a very long time, actually since 1982, when the Surgeon General Koop came out and said that marijuana had some ill effects. This is fast forward a lot of years later, Ron. I mean, this took a long time for a new Surgeon General to come out and say something. And they just said that all of the studies that they have done validate everything that I've always known, and that is that it is a dangerous substance, especially with the amount of THC now, which is much more than it was back in our day. It is very dangerous, and particularly to young people. So teenagers, minds that are still growing and are not finished completely forming, and to pregnant women for sure.
I watched the Surgeon General, the Admiral, I can't remember his name, lead the discussion today and release the findings of their very comprehensive study. And I think anybody that has any type of medical background, especially one in toxicology, absolutely tracks with what he's saying. I know I certainly do. And having been both in law enforcement and a little bit on the medical side as an investigator, I see the effects of marijuana. And I see these young people and then people going into their 30s and 40s that have been users of marijuana, pretty consistent users of marijuana, especially in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. A lot of those people are basket cases. I mean, they really are. And anybody that doesn't think that the new marijuana with its THC or tetrahydrocannabinol content is not dangerous, is not harmful, they're an idiot. Because, and I like what the Surgeon General had to say. He said, you know what? The marijuana today is not your mom's marijuana.
Yeah.
And he was right on point with that.
Yeah. And by the way, that Surgeon General, Jerome Adams, and he was very, very passionate and very well spoken about his warning to people. adolescents and pregnant women were what he really focused on, but he did say that the potency of the drug has an effect on everybody, so not just those people. And legal marijuana has grown into a $10 billion industry in the United States. Two-thirds of the states, I think 33 of the states.
Correct, 33.
They legalize it at least for medicinal use. But then we have the few states that, and it gets to be more all the time, that allow it for recreational use. So you have the Colorado and the California and some of the other states that, use it for recreational use. And I will tell you, having a business in California, when somebody comes into my office and they have been using marijuana, I can tell immediately. I can tell immediately.
Because they can't track.
They can't track. They are in slow motion.
Yeah, they can't ask probative questions. They have problems concentrating and regurgitating.
Yes.
Yeah, I see that too.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. And it reminded me of back in the day, and I'm sure that you had the same back in the day. I will never forget, you know, when it really was something that was illegal back in the day, and when a police officer could really arrest somebody for just being in possession.
Oh, been there, done that. Yeah. Many, many, many times. I used to use it as a hook.
And
you know,
you used to use marijuana?
I used to use, thank you. I used to use the possession of marijuana as a hook to get better things, to get information, to use people as, you know, special informants and things like that. And that's one of the ways, unfortunately, that's just one of the ways that you solve crimes. You know, you're not violating anybody's civil rights, but you're trading tit for tat and you know, kind of moving up. But you know what? When I, and you and I are the same age, right? So we're products of the, you know, the 60s and, you know, the hippie years and all of that. When dope...
I was never a hippie.
Was, no, I'm not saying we were hippies. I'm saying we're a product of that generation. And, you know, of course, I was an athlete at the time, and they're drug testing us all the time. And I didn't even smoke cigarettes, okay? So I didn't smoke weed. But it was really funny because when I started testing for the police department, you know, moving into the early 70s, my background investigators were saying, oh, come on, you're not going to sit here and tell me that you never smoked weed, right? Well, yeah, I can tell you that because I was still an athlete then running for the United States, and I get drug tested every week, so there's no way I'm going to smoke weed.
Well, I never did either, mainly because I don't want to inhale anything that has smoke in it. I don't even like it when you spray Windex around, so I don't like inhaling.
So you're not Bill Clinton, right?
No. So, but I do remember being, that my partner and I being at a hamburger stand, and we're kind of on one side of the hamburger stand back in the day, and, you know, we were going to grab a bite to eat. And, I mean, you could smell the marijuana smell around the corner. So I kind of just walked around the corner, and there's, you know, this little group of guys, and they're just puffing away. And you know, it's just so funny when they see you and they all scatter.
but you know, it's interesting because, you know, we were in Europe last year. And one of the places we were in was Amsterdam.
Yes.
And like every third store is a weed store, right? It's a weed dispensary. So like every fifth store is a sex shop and every third store is a dispensary. And that whole damn town smelled like weed.
Well, and the thing, you know, that really struck me about the conversation today with the Surgeon General was that's one of the first things I thought about was we saw they have two different kinds of coffee shops in the Netherlands. One is a coffee shop and one is a cafe. They call them
they call them differently. Yeah,
they call them differently. And one you can sit in and smoke your weed, buy it and smoke it there. And I will tell you, as you recall, that the parents, like there would be a dad in there, maybe in his 30s, and his, you know, 8-year-old kid in there with him, yeah. And they're both smoking it.
We saw that, and I was absolutely amazed, first of all, of the lack of parenting, but number two, the harmful effects. But,
well, the naivete.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
And you know, again, going into the law enforcement side, and with these states like Colorado and California, with them having legalized marijuana.
Yeah, how stupid is that?
Well, there's so many people that are driving under the influence, and their fatality accidents with that are, you know, drivers under the influence involved have skyrocketed. So with these states like Colorado and California, they say, well, you know, we're gonna regulate it. We're gonna get, you know, tens of millions of dollars of tax revenues, yada yada
which
yada.
Which is all they care about.
Well, yeah, it is. It isn't the welfare
of the
people.
They don't care about the welfare of the people.
Exactly. No. But look what's happened just in California. They have over 58,000 illegal marijuana farms. So that's completely undercut the state's plan to regulate it and to tax it. But more importantly, and we see this in Colorado significantly, and now we see it in California, is that the causes or the effects of those people that have used marijuana, gotten into car accidents, killed themselves, killed or seriously injured other people, and those people don't have any insurance, skyrockets.
Yeah.
Right? So the costs, I guess that's where I'm going, the cost to the community has skyrocketed. Not only have they not attained the level of taxation that they thought they were going to take, but they are spending hundreds of millions of dollars of tax money on people that have been injured and killed in accidents where people were under the influence of weed.
Well, isn't this the same thing that always happens? They don't think out what the law is going to do, the unintended consequences. They think in the very short term, and they think with greed, and they get this money, and the public suffers. I can tell you that I know for a fact that employers are suffering because of this, because what happens with a lot of the young people that are now going home and smoking literally every night, and they come to work in the morning, and they may as well be a zombie. And that's just a fact. I have seen it myself. I have seen it firsthand. It's extremely frustrating. It's extremely costly.
And you know what's tragic for me is to witness employees in various companies that are doing exactly what you're talking about. They're smoking weed every single day. They're coming to work. Like you said, they're like zombies. They can't process. And so quality control goes way down. But then the people, they're just lost and they lose their jobs. And to see a young person that can't maintain employment because, for all intents and purposes, they're pretty much addicted to the drug, that's tragic. And it is a gateway drug. And I know the Admiral talked about the addictive effects of marijuana. And I think he threw out the statistic about 20%. I think he said something like that's 20%.
Right.
So 1 in 5 people that consistently use this grade, today's grade of marijuana, become addicted.
And it is a gateway drug. What's also surprised me, just the last thing I want to say about this, is that he said that lots of pregnant women are using marijuana on a daily basis. That just shocked me.
Well, he said there was a 50% increase in the last couple of years. And when he said 50%, I went, holy criminy, that's a lot of people.
And when he described the effects that it has on an infant's brain,
yes.
Oh my gosh.
It goes right into the brain.
That is heartbreaking. And those infants have less of a chance of having a full and active life. You know, maybe, I don't know. I don't know what all the repercussions are. Let's say it takes 2 points off their IQ. Let's say it takes 5 points, 10 points. I don't know what it does. I don't think anybody exactly knows. But what they have found is that it definitely has an effect. Why would you risk the health of that child?
Well, you know what it really reminded me of when I was listening to the Surgeon General today talk about the effects on the fetus and going into the brain and everything. In my time, we had the crack babies. And
yes,
that was a horrible thing.
Yes.
I actually went to Valley Medical Center, which was our community hospital in San Jose when I was working there. And one of the nurses took me into the ward, and it was nothing but crack babies in there. And those babies were crying incessantly because they're addicted. And these are brand new born babies that are addicted and, like you said, are going into withdrawal.
Yeah.
It's horrible. People just don't see the things that we get to see.
Well, and pregnant women tend to take marijuana because they think that it helps with their morning sickness, which perhaps it does, but the effects are not worth it. So if you're a pregnant woman and you have morning sickness, talk to your doctor and do something different than marijuana.
Well, you know, let me talk about that for a second, because, you know, we hear this even from people we know. They say, well, you know, I've got glaucoma and or I've got a back problem or a neck issue or something like that. And I like to smoke it because it sort of takes that pain away. Well, listen, you can take a synthetic marijuana, which is referred to as Marinol, and it will not give you the euphoric effects. It'll deal with the pain issues, but it won't give you the euphoria. But that's what the people want. They want the euphoria, and I just don't think they're being honest with themselves.
Yeah. Well, you know, I along the same lines, I had read an article as well today that I thought was really interesting about a woman by the name of Carolyn Best, who at 36 years old was addicted to heroin and crack cocaine, and the doctors told her that she would be dead within a year. She once again had been caught shoplifting to fund her drug addiction, and she was suffering from heart failure, but the doctors would not treat her heart because of her drug addiction. I want to tell you, a year later, this woman looks, feels, and is a completely different person. She took it to heart, literally, and she cleaned herself up, and it can be done. And she, I mean, where she was, you know, had very thin and that drawn look on her face, she now looks healthy and you know, just great.
But so, you know, that is so hard to do, though. I mean, just, you know, truth and advertising here. I mean, full disclosure, once you are addicted to these drugs, I'm telling you what, it's a tough road, okay, to come back. And so you got to hand it to people that are able to put mind over matter and to get themselves cleaned up, because it's extremely difficult.
Well, and the reason that this is happening, was in England, is that the police chief of this town in West Midlands, England, has made it his personal policy to try to help these people. And he calls it offender to rehab program, and he helps them, and he's helped a number of people. He's got 9 now that he has personally, you know, kind of walked through this process and brought them literally back to life.
Well, you know, I've always felt that it's always been a health issue for me. Yes, it's a crime, but I always personally looked at it as sort of a health issue and even a mental health issue. And I think we can show compassion with these people that are addicted to drugs, and we can do everything we can to help them. But, you know, you have to draw the line when they start committing crimes to subsidize their addiction and to buy, you know, more drugs. Hey, listen, speaking of drugs, I need to get a little bit more caffeine in my system.
Hey, I added Bailey's to mine.
I may follow. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there. Well, how about some breaking news with FBI? Well, actually, it's disgraced FBI former director James Comey.
Well, I mean, it was predictable that the IG's report would be damaging to him. My big question is, why is he not being prosecuted?
Well, let's go back in time a little bit. And first of all, you know, for context, discuss who the inspector general is and what's his job. You know, even the Federal Bureau of Investigation within the United States Department of Justice requires oversight. Anytime you have a law enforcement agency and they have the power of arrest, search, and seizure, they all need to be monitored to make sure that they're doing everything appropriately. Because without monitoring, you can have people doing the wrong things. You can have them violating policies and violating, people's constitutional rights. And that's the case with Comey. So here's the guy that was the former director of the FBI. He's the chief outside of the attorney general. He is the most powerful law enforcement officer in the United States. And the thing that I cannot stand about this man, and I'll be full disclosure, very transparent, I don't like the guy. I thought he was a phony from the beginning. He's a holier than, you know, thou kind of guy.
Yep.
And he has his own way of doing things, and he thinks that because he's right and everybody else is wrong, he can go ahead and violate departmental policies that 35,000 other men and women of the FBI who work very hard and risk their lives every single day, they have to adhere to, but not the top dog. So anyway, we had this whole Trump derangement syndrome, this entire witch hunt, the FISA warrants, everything like that, the Steele dossier, and you've got guys like James Comey, everybody, not everybody on the seventh floor, but a lot of the people on the seventh floor, which is the executive administrative wing of the Federal Bureau of Investigations, they are involved in this, their own collusion.
Yes.
Against the President of the United States.
And there was a number of them, McCabe and Strzok.
Lisa Page and all of that. But anyway, so let's talk about James Comey. So he gets fired, and appropriately fired 2 years ago for violating a number of very important policies in the Federal Bureau of Investigations. And so the IG takes up this investigation, Horowitz, and he released this investigation. There's a couple more coming. The FISA one is the next one. And this is the second time that the Inspector General has found that James Comey was culpable for leaking sensitive FBI documents, specific memos that he wrote immediately following his meetings with the President of the United States, Donald Trump. And then gave it to an intermediary who was a special employee, not non-paid special employee of the FBI, a professor out of Columbia University who's tight friends with Comey, and then he directs this professor, I can't remember his name, it's not important, to leak the information to the media.
Yes, and in addition to that, when they went and searched his house, some of the memos were conveniently missing. And that also is against the rules and against the documents that he signed when he was employed by the FBI.
But, you know, it's more than that, though, because they had a number of FBI agents over there, special agents and senior special agents, there with the search warrant, and he lied to them.
Yes.
About whether or not those documents were going to be found inside his house, and they were found inside his safe. All right. So his big spin is, I didn't do anything wrong. Those were personal memos that I wrote. Oh, wait a minute, buddy. You wrote those memos, even by your own admission. You wrote those memos when you were on duty. You wrote those memos on a FBI laptop that you brought with you and put inside your car when you were driven to the White House. You get out of the meeting with Trump. You get your driver to drive you back to DOJ, you know, to the FBI headquarters, and while he's driving you back there, which is not very far, you are typing out on an official FBI computer a memo. Okay, so
yes.
You can't call that your own personal memo.
Well,
that is a
them.
Restricted yeah. document. It was a confidential document, and he violated all sorts of FBI policies. But your question, why is this guy not getting prosecuted, is a good one.
Well, it's here's about the same time, Ron, you have, I think her name is Lori Loughner, the actress, who is went to court regarding getting her kids into
USC. Oh, yeah, the scandal, which was a sting, by the way, which was a DOJ sting.
Okay, well, so when she went to court, this was just a preliminary hearing to do some legal things, but they said that she and her husband, I think his name is Massimo, could get 40 years. 40 years. What they did, in my opinion, is not nearly as serious as what James Comey did. Why is he not even getting one day? And this is where, even though both are rich and both are in that elite crowd, the justice is different for each. And this is something I really, really disagree with. I think all of America should disagree with. Justice should be the same for everyone. If you do something wrong, you should be prosecuted for it. Or if you're not going to prosecute somebody, then you can't prosecute anybody. But you know, you can't pick and choose like this.
Well, no, and you're exactly right. And this is the whole thing with the deep state and the swamp, you know, all these, you know, interesting terms for what's going on. But the American people, unless you're a Kool-Aid drinker, they know exactly what's going on. And the people like Hillary Clinton that lost the 30,000 emails, that the FBI allowed her to destroy her BlackBerry phones, more than one, computers, more than one. They allowed her to dump all sorts of materials.
Bleach bit
everything. And then also during the interviews, none of the interviews were tape recorded. And they even, and I can't even imagine the other thing they did, not only is not recording interviews with people of interest and suspects in serious federal crimes, not only is that ridiculous, but when you allow another witness into the interview room, okay, and that other person is a person of interest, and they're listening to the probative questions, I'm telling you, that's crazy.
Well, you know, the fix was in there, and we all know that, but it's kind of interesting to watch the different players in this. We have the McCabe and Comey and Rosenfeld and everybody who's, you know, now they're all pointing fingers at each other.
And they're all writing books and they're all making money.
Well, they're,
And McCabe just gets picked up by CNN.
Yeah.
Okay,
after,
so he's going to make money.
After being just proven to be a liar and being fired from the FBI, and he gets hired by CNN.
So that's the guy you want on television.
Yeah, that's the guy that you want to believe your news from. Yeah.
So, but anyway, we're going to see where this is going
to
go.
But the thing to me, again, going back to the school scandal, when you tell me that those parents, and by the way, I think what they did was abhorrent. I think it was totally wrong. And I think that they were selfish and just unfair to other people who had a right to those spots in the school.
Oh, boy, and that's a good point that you raised, because people need to remember, Linda, that when they take a slot, okay, because they bribe somebody and taken a slot because they're rich and they can afford to do it, they cheated a well-deserving man or woman out of that same spot.
Yeah, and somebody that really could row.
Right. By the way, rowing team, they had their kids on the rowing team.
But 40 years for that would be just outrageous. There are people that are raping and murdering that are not getting those kind of sentences. So I'm just confused about the whole where we're going with this justice system. And when you have a Hillary Clinton that gets off scot-free for what she did, and you have a James Comey who gets off scot-free for what he did, and an Andrew McCabe and a Peter Strzok, and all these people who get off, and then you want to prosecute somebody for this school thing, how do you compare those?
Well, you know, to use a pun, there's them and just us.
Yeah.
Right?
That,
and that's what we get, the just us.
Just us, yeah.
All right. So listen, let me turn into another topic, and I want to talk about chicken.
Oh, well, wait. Before you talk about chicken, I want to talk about some more just us.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to talk about Ilhan Omar.
Oh, go ahead.
Good topic.
Good topic.
The hypocrisy of this woman
who's a Muslim woman.
Who's a Muslim woman who has been kind of found out to be having an affair. Of course, she's had so much shady stuff going on with her marriages and this thing with her brother and this thing with her so-called husband. And now she's been having an affair with the husband of another woman. So he's having an affair.
Who has been a campaign consultant for her. And the reason why I bring up the fact that she's a Muslim woman is underscoring the hypocrisy that you're talking about, because here she is and she dresses up in the Habib and everything like that, and she places herself as being a fervent Muslim religious supporter and everything, yet she violates one of the biggest religious no-nos in the Muslim religion, and that is she's an adulteress. Okay.
Yes.
And if she was in, and she comes from Somalia, and if she was in Somalia, they would either stone her to death or they would put a tire around her and set that tire and her on fire.
Well,
okay.
I mean,
that's how they handle
this. That's a horrible, horrible word picture. But when you see this woman, and what is her response? Her response is that she's not going to answer anything. Why not? Because they're stupid questions, she says. Really, you are a complete fraud. You want to wear this
wrap
on your head,
right,
and be a fervent Muslim, and you are somebody also that is for female genital mutilation, yet you are having an affair with another woman's husband while you are also married.
And by the way, mm-hmm. and there are, I think, serious allegations of campaign finance fraud.
Yes.
Because
mm-hmm.
her campaign was writing checks to thousands of dollars, okay, to the boyfriend who she's having an affair with, so they can go and do stuff together, and that should have been private money.
Right.
Okay,
so
not campaign money.
$200,000 of campaign funds, which she failed to itemize, travel reimbursements for his particular, what is called Tim Minette's E Street Group LLC, which is a political consulting group.
Right.
So what I'm saying here is how hypocritical this whole thing is. And, there's not a word that woman could speak again that I would ever believe, because she has no credibility anymore.
Well, I'm thinking that it's going to be very interesting, not only with the people in her own district, which are Somalis, and a lot of them are Muslim, but when she goes overseas and goes to a Muslim country, how will she be looked upon? Okay, because now that news is international that she's an adulteress. And like I said, that's a huge no-no. Under Sharia law, she'd be executed.
Well, yeah, it's going to be an interesting election cycle for sure. The Republicans have already made some sort of an effort and put forth some sort of paperwork to have her thrown out of Congress.
Well, we'll see how that goes. I'd like to see how the campaign finance fraud investigation goes. But can I talk about chicken?
Let's talk about chicken.
Okay, so I got a chicken story for you. So it seems that Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC, we love the chicken, has just debuted a plant-based, quote, chicken, close quotes, which means there's no chicken in it whatsoever, and it's plant-based. And
a vegetarian chicken.
A veggie chicken. Yeah. And they debuted the chicken at one of their stores in Atlanta, Georgia. And as a matter of fact, because it's, a green kind of thing, they did a special deal and they actually painted the store, green, had green stripes on it. And the bucket that the chicken comes in is green.
Okay.
So anyway, there was a 1 hour line to buy this chicken. And they had it in nuggets, and they had it in, what's the other thing that they do? They're nuggets and wings, boneless wings.
Oh, okay.
And so, and it came with the different sauces and everything like that. And they sold the darn chicken out in 5 hours. So in 5 hours, they sold more of this chicken than they did in an entire week of their chicken tenders.
Yeah,
okay?
This is really
good. Or chicken nuggets.
Yeah, The not a chicken nuggets,
yeah.
This has been a very interesting chicken week, because Popeyes also came out, and I like Popeyes. I mean, I used to like them more You know what's funny is you and I eat Popeyes only when we travel on the Highway 10 to California.
That's right. We never buy it unless we see it on the roadway.
Yeah,
right?
unless we're traveling somewhere. And then there's just that point in time when chicken just sounds good. My other passion, though, is Panda Express. I love Panda Express. So I get that chicken, and it's fresher, and it's not fried. But Popeyes apparently came out. I haven't tried it, but I will. With a chicken sandwich, and apparently people love this chicken sandwich. And so much so that one location sold out completely, and when they sold out, across the street is a Chick-fil-A, who, by the way, also has a chicken sandwich, which I really
think they have, personally, they have the best one.
And Wendy's and Popeyes are kind of arguing back and forth about who's got the, on Twitter, about who's got the best chicken sandwich. Well, in the meantime, the
Chick-fil-A?
The Chick-fil-A people came over to help the Popeyes people because they ran out of their sandwiches. So they brought sandwiches over for free for everybody that was waiting in line, and for the staff as well.
Well, that's pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. And but it's just so interesting. There's so much talk about chicken right now. And to make matters worse, there's a guy in Tennessee who was driving all around trying to get one of those Popeyes sandwiches. I guess he had a real Jones for one of those Popeyes sandwiches. And he couldn't get it. And he drove from place to place to place. And they were all sold out. He is now suing Popeyes for putting him through that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? He needs a safe place and a sucky toy. But speaking of chickens,
and
speaking of Chick-fil-A, the University of Kansas has got a Chick-fil-A issue because there's a group there's a group of professors there that are telling the students there, because they have a Chick-fil-A restaurant on campus at the University of Kansas. And so a group of professors have labeled the Chick-fil-A a bastion of hate. Okay? Bastion of hate. And so, and they want the restaurant removed from campus.
What is wrong with these people? Nothing could be further from the truth.
I know. Well, there's an associate professor, and her name, she's associate professor of women's studies, and her name is Katie Botza. And so she's encouraging students and faculty members to boycott the popular restaurant on campus. I don't think it's going to work. They're in a contract until 2024, and we'll see what happens there.
Well, you know what happened last time people tried to boycott Chick-fil-A?
Oh, yeah.
Is that their sales went sky high through the roof. And for me, if somebody did that in our neighborhood and tried to boycott the Chick-fil-A, I'd be over there buying chicken right away, because I love their company philosophy. I love that they're closed and they let their employees off on Sunday, even if I want a chicken sandwich on Sunday. But I also love the way that they train their employees and the way they treat their customers.
It's a wonderful business model, and that's why they're so successful. How about our last cup of coffee?
Okay.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Since we were talking about chicken, let's stay with fast food for a few minutes here. In the fast food market, it's changed quite a bit over the years. And do you have any idea what the turnover is, the average turnover in fast food restaurants per year is?
No, I don't.
Well, it's 81%, but that's actually a low number. Most fast food restaurants have 100 to 150% turnover.
No, wait a minute. Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. When you say 81% or 100, 150% turnover. What does that mean? In a year period, what are we talking about?
Okay, so what we're talking about is, let's just say that your fast food place is a McDonald's.
Okay.
Okay. In a year, 81% of those people will quit, and you'll bring in 81% new people, up to 150%. And when you say 150%, what that means is that 100% have turned over, and another 50% of those have again turned over. So the people are not staying employed at these jobs very long in the fast food industry. So the fast food industry, and there's lots of reasons for that.
I was just going to ask you, do you have any idea what the reasons are?
Well, there's lots of reasons for that. One is, that it costs a lot to, now to have a fast food employee. And the people, at least in America, don't see that kind of a job as a job of the future.
Correct.
And so they don't tend to stay. And we don't have a lot of respect for that job. So neither the consumer nor the worker has a lot of respect for being a fast food worker. So they don't tend to stay.
Can I say something for just a second? And I'm going back to my old high school days. And truth be told, I never did work in a fast food restaurant. I'm probably one of the few teenagers that never worked in a fast food restaurant. I worked in a gas station. But it was never designed to be a long-term job. It was supposed to be a job where you came in as a teenager, high school, with a work permit, and you stayed there for about a year, maybe two, and learned about the trade and learned about customer service and learned about, multitasking and responsibility and things like that, so that you could mature, have some context about what the work environment is like, build yourself up, and go to something better.
Yeah, it was a way for a high school and a college student to make some money.
Right.
And to help put themselves at least through college.
Exactly.
Back in the day, like you were talking about, in 1950, the labor force participation for 16 to 19-year-olds was 52.5%.
But that's changed a lot now.
It's changed a tremendous amount now. The highest it reached was 58.9%, which was in 1978. Then it dropped back down to 52% in 2000. Now, between 2010 and 2018, it's at like 34%, so it's dropped quite a bit. And the median age has also changed, too. So before,
and it's gotten older.
It's gotten older. So the median age between 2005 and 2017 was 29 years old.
Well, I think something that has a lot to do with that, and I actually applaud this, is we're seeing a lot more senior citizens working in fast food restaurants.
Well, 29 is not a senior citizen, Ron.
No. But I think what I'm saying is, and of course some of it is speculation based on my experience in going in fast food restaurants and seeing so many more senior citizens working in fast food than I ever saw before. You would never find them before. You would never see a senior citizen working in a fast food restaurant, ever. Okay, but now you see them. But what I mean is, because they're older, they're already in their 60s, or they're in their 50s, or in their 60s, that raises the age when we're talking about kids
the
that
averages.
Used to be 16, 17, 18 years old.
Well, and that figure has plummeted now to 17.8% that are teenagers working in restaurants. So that's incredible to me, because I know that I started working when I was 15 years old. I could get a work permit. And
speaking of chicken, didn't you work in a KFC?
I worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken. I absolutely did. And loved it, and still love the chicken to this day. I loved it then, and I still do to this day. But, so they're thinking about putting more technology in. Some people say that they will go to all robots eventually, but I think that they're going to start looking at doing more of a mix, kind of like Panera Bread does. When you go into Panera Bread, you can walk up to the counter and order, or you can go to the little kiosk and you can place your order and have it ready.
Right.
A lot of people, too, like Starbucks is doing the mobile ordering, which is hugely popular. So
is that like on your app, on your phone?
They do it on your app.
That's interesting.
And you do it before you get there, and then it's ready when you get there. And so that is really becoming popular. And so it doesn't require as many people to wait on people anymore, because the turnover factor for businesses is very expensive. If you take one employee in a fast food restaurant, you can figure that in the first 2 months of their employment, you've just lost 50% of their wages, because you've had to be training them and having other people help them. And,
exactly.
And then if you have 100% or 150% turnover, that becomes very expensive.
Well, it's also very expensive now because of the big push to have $15 an hour.
Sure.
And that's a lot of money to pay somebody.
Yeah. Well, you know, in different countries that you and I travel to, when people work in food institutions or restaurants, I mean, it is a career for them.
Yes.
In the United States, it just is not, and it's kind of almost frowned upon. So we've got a little bit of ways to go with the fast food, and there are companies certainly that do it. You look at companies like Wendy's, and you look at companies like Chick-fil-A, who really have a good company ethics program, and they really train their employees. And I think that their turnover is less than the others. And it's just one of those things, but it's an interesting change in society, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I've got a couple of things that I want to say. You know, number one, and you know this, we both own businesses, employees like leadership. Okay, they like leadership, they thrive on leadership, they thrive on being appreciated, and you telling your employee when they're doing a good job how much you appreciate and value their work, and you share the work ethos with them. You actually teach them about how to have a work ethos. And I think that's very, very important. I started to see this increase in robotics, so to speak, about 3 or 4 years ago, when there was the big push in the San Francisco Bay Area and in Los Angeles and in Seattle, in Portland. These are all very liberal areas for a $15 an hour employee. And right after we saw that, I went into a McDonald's, and it was 80% robotics. In other words, just like you said, Linda, you went up to a kiosk and you just hit all the buttons of what you wanted, and there was one person that brought that food to you. And I only saw it in the McDonald's, I only saw four people. There was one person working the front counter just to bring your food to you. And then I saw one person, you know, with the headset on for the pickup orders, right? The takeout orders. And then I saw two cooks in the back, and maybe there was a manager. But that, as opposed to seeing 15 or 20 people at that McDonald's before. And when you mentioned Panera Bread, and actually that was the first time I ever saw robotics, where you went up and you pushed the buttons and put your card in, and I mean, nobody even handled any money.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of the way of the future. I don't think it's going to go all the way that way. I think that there's going to be a compromise between people and machines, but it kind of has to go that way, because you know, we can't keep going with it the way that it is, because those jobs are just not paying enough to be able to afford. And you don't want to start paying $20 for a hamburger at a fast food place.
Well, that's it, because don't forget, it's not only, and you know more about this than I do because you handle these issues as a business owner. It's not only what you pay them, but it's the benefits that you have to give them, and then it's also the workers' compensation insurance that you have to pay for. And, I mean, that really drives up the cost of food. And somebody said that in fast food, just like in grocery stores, there's not a lot of profit.
Well, yeah, I don't know about the profit, but what I do know is that they don't give a lot of benefits in fast food restaurants. Only 14% of all fast food restaurants offer sick leave, and only 16% offer paid time off.
Well, you know, Linda, the fast food industry is going through some very interesting times now, and I know you brought up the whole issue of robotics, but again, to me, it seems like a cost and issue and a price point. Because one of the things that I'm noticing is, you know, you go to a McDonald's-like place. I don't want to pick on McDonald's, but you go to a McDonald's-like place. It could be Wendy's, it could be Burger King, whatever. And I found that if you're going to order a combo meal, right, so you get a hamburger, you get the fries, and you get the drink, it's going to cost you almost $9. Well, what I'm seeing in restaurants now is I can go into a sit-down restaurant and for $9, or actually a little bit less than $9, I can have a sit-down meal that the quality of the meal is so much better than the bag meal that I'm getting at the drive-up fast food window.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. Yep, it's changing. I mean, the business world is constantly on the move, and it's definitely changing. I was really surprised to find how few teenagers now are employed in fast food. It used to be kind of the place where you started.
Yeah, but you know what? Now, especially with millennials and everything, they, and I think you said it, they look down at that job. And they don't even want jobs. Even some jobs that pay $15 an hour, they don't even want jobs that pay $15 an hour now. It's just really bizarre. You know, I was our gardener. Okay, our gardener was commiserating with me, and he's got his kid, you know, during the summertime, and his kid is home. And the kid is, I think he's 17 years old, and the dad wanted to kind of teach him the business, and the kid was talking about, hey, I want to make some money. And the father says, okay, well, that's great. I'll teach you the gardening business, and I will pay you $100 a day. That's pretty darn good money, $100 a day. He says, I can't get my kid to get out of bed. He doesn't want to work for $100 a day.
Yeah, I think that that's.
You know, I'm saying, pretty, are you kidding me?
I think that that's pretty pervasive.
I know in my younger days, I would really want to make $100 a day. Well, hey, I'm going to switch it up again.
Okay.
So I want to talk about the trials and tribulations of the New York Police Department. And you know, we love to go to New York. We love the NYPD cops. I personally believe that, all things considered, and we travel internationally, the best police department in the world. Okay, we're talking about 35,000 police officers. And, I mean, hundreds of specialized assignments, and it's a tough job.
Yeah.
I don't care where you're a cop, it's a tough job. But in NYC, you know you're going to have a tough job. But what is happening to make the job of the police officers so much more difficult and stressful is the lack of leadership from Mayor Bill de Blasio,
yes,
and his puppet police commissioner, James O'Neill. And just recently, the Police Benevolent Association, the PBA of the NYPD, has voted no confidence in Mayor de Blasio and in their own police commissioner, O'Neill. And one of the things that just hit the nail on the head, and I guess maybe the straw that broke the camel's back, is the recent termination of Officer Daniel Pantaleo. And if you remember, we're going back about 5 years, the Eric Gardner in custody death.
Yes.
I wrote about it in my Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. There was not only an internal affairs investigations, an attorney general's investigation, and a medical investigation from the coroner, from the medical examiner, and the chief forensic pathologist, several of them, and they determined that the officer was not responsible in Eric Gardner's death. And I'm bet that's news to a lot of people, because Black Lives Matter threw it out. Everybody did. Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, round up the usual suspects, Barack Obama. Everybody was dumping on Officer Pantaleo and saying he killed Eric Gardner. Eric Gardner, remember, I can't breathe.
Yes.
Eric Gardner. Well, there's a lot of reasons you can't breathe. The medical examiner and everybody determined that it was, yes, an in-custody death because Gardner died while he was in police custody, but it was a combination of his bad heart, everything that was going on with him medically, and his constant resistance with not only Pantaleo, but other officers that culminated in his sudden death.
But right? Ron, these guys don't let facts get in their way.
Well, Pantaleo didn't. He did not violate NYPD policies.
Correct.
He did not violate the law. He did not violate constitutional rights. Now, there was a lawsuit in regards to that. I think the lawsuit settled out, but that was done for political reasons. But speaking of political reasons, they fired this officer 5 years after Gardner's death. 5 years they had to investigate this thing. They found that he was not culpable in Gardner's death, but they fired him for political reasons, and the NYPD men and women, rank and file, have gone nuts over this. And just to let you know, within a week of his firing, their arrests plummeted by 27% over the same amount of arrests last year. 27% down, and the crime rate in NYC, right up in the air.
Sure. Yep, it's unfortunate, and de Blasio is a disaster for that city.
Well, you know, what I want to, as we kind of bring our, you know, coffee conversation to a close, and, you know, we have a boy in law enforcement, it is so difficult to be a law enforcement officer today. And when you see what is going on in Los Angeles, in Baltimore, in New York City, in many of these other cities, the morale is so bad, they know the administration is not going to back them up. And these men and women say to themselves, why should I risk my life and lose my job and lose my pension and lose my benefits and lose my marriage and become depressed? Why should I do that?
Sure. And lose my freedom.
The last thing I want to talk about is the tragedy in New York City and in their police department. The suicides of officers has seen a dramatic upsurge. And as of this date, they've had 9 officers kill themselves. Okay, you can't tell me there's not pressure in that job.
No, there's pressure in that job. You know, on just one little lighter note, Ron, before we hit the hay, our next several conversations are going to be from Italy. And I'm really excited because we are going to have a chance to talk with Giovanni, who we spoke with last year on Talking While Married. And we're going to get an update on what's happening in Italy. There's some big political things happening there. So I'm really curious to find out what's happening there. And we also have some very interesting law enforcement friends that are going to be joining us. And so we will have some guests for the next few times that you and I get to talk together, and I'm looking forward to it.
And we're going to see Tuscany, and we're going to see Lake Como, and we're going to go to a couple of places we've never gone before, even though we've been to Italy a few times. So I'm looking forward to friends and great food.
Pizza.
All right. You ready for bed?
I'm ready.
Here we go.